Well, of course, this is a subject this morning that all of us have been really looking forward to, except Carol and me. This is our least favorite subject to speak about. The physical relationship in marriage. And I've got to tell you a story that some guy shared with me just a few weeks ago. A pair of newlyweds were just settling into their first home in the weeks following their honeymoon. And they were making the usual kinds of adjustments that newlyweds make, and they were also beginning to discover some of the little peculiarities about each other that had not had an opportunity or time enough yet to surface. And he was beginning to discover this little habit that his wife had, which had really begun to irritate him, and it was the habit of saying, just a sec, whenever he would ask her to do something. And, you know, there was just a little delay. Well, just a sec, and I'll take care of it. Well, this was beginning to get on him, but this one particular Saturday morning, it was a beautiful spring day. Everyone in the neighborhood was out in the yard working or playing or doing something. It was such a gorgeous day, and they were doing something outside in the yard. And several times during the day, she had given him this little routine, just a sec, until finally, Saturday afternoon, it got the best of him. He just could not take it anymore, and he said, "No!" Very loud, so, you know, it was kind of broadcast to the whole neighborhood. "No! No! No more sex! I'm sick and tired of sex!" Well, the dear guy realized shortly after he had said that what the neighbors had heard. And so very sheepishly and yet in a loud enough voice for all the neighbors to hear, he says, "Well, maybe just a little bit more." Oh. I tell you, life can be beautiful. When God created man and woman, male and female, the Genesis record states that God stood back, looked at what he had accomplished through his creative endeavors, and in the last verse of Genesis chapter 1, God speaks and he says, "Behold, it is very good." Now, six times prior to that, in Genesis chapter 1, God has done a similar thing. He has stopped. He has looked over his creative endeavors. He has evaluated and he says, "Behold, it is good." But after he created man and woman, he said, "Behold, it is very good." And I don't know what that says to you about where you stand, where we as human beings stand, where you as a man, you as a woman stand in God's economy, in his priority list. But what it says to me is that we're right up there at the top. He really cares for us. He is very concerned about us. And we are the prize of his creative endeavors. "Behold, you are very good." And I'm sure that there's some of us here in this room this morning that have trouble with our inner self-esteem. And if we really stop to think about that, where we stand in God's sight, right up at the top of his priority list, it ought to help us inwardly to be more accepting of ourselves, realize that we are a choice vessel of God's, whom he has created and whom he loves and he cares for very deeply. "Behold, you are very good." And according to God's own wisdom and design, sexuality was ordained for the propagation of the human race, for pleasure, and for an expression of the kind of love between a husband and a wife, which nourishes true oneness. Three reasons why God has given us this thing we call sexuality. And neither the distorted image of somber, negative, puritanical attitudes, which formulated the philosophy of sex for many years in our country and in others as well, nor what we have today, what's called the new morality or situation ethics, which throws off all restraints and argues for sexual freedom, neither of these two extremes are an accurate picture of the teaching of the Scriptures on this subject. We live in a day and age which is permeated with this whole area. There's hardly a newsstand you can walk by. There's hardly a TV. You can't turn your TV on for an hour without this coming into your living room or wherever you have your TV in your home. Our society is permeated with it, and I attribute a great deal from a human standpoint what we call today the sexual revolution to a fellow by the name of Hugh Hefner. He has perpetrated one of the greatest hoaxes that ever has been fostered off onto the human race, and particularly those of us here in the United States, although it's gone way beyond the borders of the United States. To portray sex basically as any other physical phenomenon that takes place, to portray it as something that is has no boundaries, there are no fences around it, to portray it as something that is exciting, wonderful, no matter where it happens or with whom it happens, is one of the greatest slices into God's plan that has ever been perpetrated. And one of the tragic things to me is that we as Christians, for the most part, have let the sexual revolution go by us without even realizing how much of an impact it's had on us in our thinking, in our morals, in our ethics, in our churches, with our young people. In some ways, we've had our heads in the sand on this one, and we've got to get it out, and we've got to see it. I would like to recommend a book that you read on this subject by Randy Alcorn. It's one of the Multnomah series, Critical Concern series, and it's called Christianity in the Wake of the Sexual Revolution. And it deals with the issue as particularly as it relates to the evangelical church today. And if you've not read that, I would strongly urge you to get a hold of a copy of it. It'll open your eyes to some things that perhaps you've never seen before in relation to this whole subject. Now, sex is a gift from God with a purpose, and I've already mentioned what those three purposes are, but let me restate them and give you some passages of Scripture just to jot down. You can look them up later at your own leisure. First of all, God had to have a way to provide for parenthood. When He told Adam and Eve to be fruitful and multiply, He invented sex in order for that to take place. So to propagate the human race for parenthood, Genesis 1, 27 and 28 talks about that. Genesis 9, 1 and Psalm 127, 3 are just three passages that deal with this subject. Secondly, God has given us this wonderful thing that we call sexuality to promote mutual love. To promote mutual love. The highest expression of the scriptural term, and the two shall become one flesh. And that statement, as I have mentioned before, is repeated four times in the Scriptures. Genesis 2:24, and then twice in the Gospels, Matthew 19:5, Mark 10:7. And then at the end of Ephesians 5, verse 31. And then thirdly, to produce physical pleasure. The sex is given to us as a gift from God to produce physical pleasure, probably that has no equal. Now, I don't know whether you have ever stopped to really think about those three reasons why God has given us this wonderful thing that we call sexuality. But I marvel at the genius of the creativity of God in this. I really do. Of course, I'm awed constantly, especially living here in Colorado. Every time I come over to the office or to the Glen here, we live over on the east side of town, so we come up over Austin Bluffs Parkway, and I look out there at the beautiful Pikes Peak and the western slope, I mean the eastern slope of the Rockies, and I just marvel. Carol and I pray that when we came out here that God would continue to give us an awed feeling of His wonder and beauty. And the 15 years that we've lived out here, we still haven't lost it. So He's answered that prayer. And I'm awed by His creative genius and endeavors. And when it comes to this area of sexuality, I never cease to be amazed at His creative genius especially as it relates to this first purpose, to provide for parenthood, and the second, to produce pleasure that probably has no equal. You know, God did not have to do this the way he did. He did not have to produce children between a husband and a wife in the way that he has done it. You know, you think of his creative genius, and, you know, he could have done it anyway. It could have, well, he could have had children born as a result of a couple exchanging earwax with a Q-tip. Why not? I'm sort of glad that he didn't, but I don't know whether this has really gripped you or not. The beauty of what God has done, and the wonder of it all. You see, sex is not only a gift of God, it's a God-given drive. He has put this within us, and it's there, and there's hardly a day goes by, but in one way or another, we're not thinking or acting on this particular issue as a married couple. But the thing that is another beautiful thing to me is that with every God-given drive, there is a God-given design in which it is to operate. And as you look into the scriptures, you find that the God-given design for this matter of sexuality is strictly within the bonds of matrimony. And I don't care about the Hugh Hefners in this world and his like who try to perpetrate a great lie off on us, that whenever sexuality operates outside the bonds of marriage, eventually it brings heartache and guilt and despair and brokenness. If you trace it down, oh, maybe at the time it's a fantastic thing, you know, the affair and all of that. But down the road, and Carol and I have seen it over and over and over again, the tragedy that this brings when we break God's boundaries. Now this matter of producing physical pleasure is a beautiful thing in the scriptures. I don't know whether you have ever searched the scriptures on this one or not, but there are some phenomenal passages in the Word of God that relate to this. There's a whole book in the Bible that is devoted to nothing but sexuality between a husband and a wife. And it gets pretty explicit, the book of Song of Solomon. And if you got a hold of a good Hebrew commentary on the book of Song of Solomon and you read it through, you would discover that the writer of the commentary would refer to certain Hebrew words that are used in the course of that several chapters in Song of Solomon. He would use terms like that is an erotic word. And so God has given us this. It's his idea. It's his plan. And he, of course, means for it to be used for our enjoyment and pleasure and to accomplish his purposes in our lives together. This subject, however, is probably one of the most difficult subjects for a husband and a wife to talk about together, to openly discuss. Now, yesterday we talked about communication. Well, this is an area where we need to develop our communication skills. And I realize that may be something that causes your Adam's apple to stick in your throat as you even think about it, let alone do it. But let me give you a suggestion. This is very important that we talk about this. This is one of the three areas in marriage that probably creates or is the basis for problems more than any other three. The first one is communication, the second one is money, and the third one is sex. And communication is a key to unlocking the door on both issues of money and sex. If that is a problem, if there are problems that arise, if there are issues that need to be talked about. And one way to get going in this, to talk about it together, is to get a hold of a good book on the subject and read it out loud together. So you get used to saying the words out loud without embarrassment. And two that I would recommend, Tim LaHaye's book, The Act of Marriage. Tim LaHaye, The Act of Marriage. And secondly, Dr. Ed Wheat's book, intended for pleasure. If you're going to pick one of the two, I'd recommend the latter above the former, although they're both very good. Dr. Ed Wheat is a medical doctor down in Springdale, Arkansas, practices medicine there, but also is a noted sex counselor. He counsels people from all over the world on this subject. They come to Springdale, Arkansas to get some insight into this area, or he does a lot of it on the telephone. Wonderful guy. He and his wife, Gay, are just fantastic Christians. Now, the other day when we were talking about differences, we tried to emphasize the fact that these differences that we were talking about were not necessarily man-woman differences. They were people differences. And simply because we're two different people, these things crowd in upon us and we begin to discover them. But when it comes to this matter of sex, there are some significant differences that exist between men and women which we need to be aware of. And I think especially us men need to be aware of this. Because one of our responsibilities as a husband is to meet the needs of our wives in this area. And we need to know what's going on inside of them. We need to know what makes them tick in this area. Let me list about five or six differences that exist in this matter of sexuality between men and women. And I don't want to be dogmatic on this, and so I give myself a little bit of a hedge room here in saying that this is true probably of about 90 to 95% of women. There are exceptions to this. Very few exceptions in men, but maybe some. For a man, sex is an act. It's an interlude in time. It happens and it's over. For a woman, sex is involved in all of life. It's part of the drama of life. There's a lot more involved to her than just an interlude in time. There's a lot more goes into it. Secondly, to a man, it's a strong physical drive accompanied with emotional needs. For a woman, it's a strong emotional needs accompanied with physical needs. For a man, it's more important how often. For a woman, it's more important how to. That goes back to the drama of life, the environment, the atmosphere. A man, when it comes to sex, is quick to react to stimulation. A woman, comparatively slow to react and needs to be stimulated. A man is stimulated by seeing, primarily. A woman is stimulated by touch, by tenderness. It goes back again to the drama of life. There's more to it. A man's basic makeup is more sexual than it is paternal. A woman's basic makeup is more maternal than it is sexual. And I simply mean by that a woman is far more likely to think of the sex act resulting in the birth of a child than the man is when they enter into it together as a husband and a wife. In fact, that's probably the furthest thing from a man's mind. So those are some significant differences between us as men and women when it comes to this matter of sexuality. Now, I could sort of summarize most of what those six things say by just one little illustration. And,
Is this working?
When it comes to sex, a man is more like an electric light bulb. You flip the switch, and on he goes. And then when it's all over, you flip the switch, and off he goes. Now, for a woman, when it comes to sex, she's more like an electric iron. You flip the switch and it takes a little time to get warmed up. And then when it's all over, you flip the switch and it takes a little time to cool down. Now, some of you guys are sitting there and you're thinking, oh yeah, electric iron. You flip the switch and 30 seconds. Yeah, it takes about 30 seconds, I guess. No. 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 minutes sometimes. Depends. But see, this is an area that we need to talk about. Have you ever really discussed that together? Have you gotten to the place where you let her be the judge of when we're ready after the foreplay? So when you think of an electric iron, guys, why, you know, think minutes, not seconds, okay? We had a little discussion with a couple who had been to one of our seminars one time. We ran into them at a shopping center after the seminar was over a couple days later, and we were standing there talking, and he had to go make a phone call or something, and so we continued talking with her, and she kind of got this twinkle in her eye, and it was sort of one of those looks, there's something I'd really like to tell you, but I'm not sure I should type of looks, you know. But finally she decided she would tell us, and so she mentioned that, because her husband had left, Jim, I think was his name, and she said, on Monday afternoon, Jim called me from the office at home. She says he never, very, very seldom ever calls me from the office. And he really didn't have anything to say. It was just kind of chit-chat. And about ready to hang up the phone, and he said, by the way, sweetheart, turn on the iron. I said, did you like that? And she said, oh, yeah, that was great. Yeah. We, gentlemen, need to learn to be lovers. Now, I'm talking about a different kind of love now than we were the other morning. The physical type of love. We need to learn to be the Don Juan type of lover, to meet the needs of our wives in this area. And getting that iron turned on is one of the great, beautiful, exciting jobs that we have as husbands. But some of us go about it in a very, very sad way. Let me describe for you how some husbands approach this whole matter. He has gotten home from work. They've had dinner and they're in the living room reading or watching a little TV, and the evening wears on, and up to this point, absolutely nothing has been said that would even indicate that he has expectations for that night in bed. He didn't say anything when he left for work that morning, didn't say anything when he got home, hasn't said anything all evening. And so bedtime comes, and they kind of yawn and stretch, and she goes into the bathroom and does her little chores and gets her pajamas on and crawls into her side of the bed and picks up the Reader's Digest and begins to read. And he does the same thing and picks up the Time magazine and crawls into his side of the bed, and they lay there reading for, 20 minutes or so. And finally, she kind of yawns and lays down the Reader's Digest, turns out her light on her side of the bed and pats him on the fanny and says, good night, sweetheart, and rolls over. And 10 minutes later, he lays down Time magazine and turns out the light. And there they are, laying there in the dark. And 1 minute goes by, and 2 minutes go by. 2.5 minutes go by. And then out of the dark comes this hand. How romantic, huh? I mean, guys, we can do better than that. Now, don't misunderstand me. I have nothing against spontaneity. But if that is our habit, our way of life, our pattern, our lifestyle of making love to our wives, we got some things to learn. The iron needs warming up. This is one of those areas of our lives together as a husband and a wife where we can develop those neat little sayings, words, phrases, sentences that mean subtle little things that indicate to us as a couple what our expectations are for that night, and we can say it right in front of other people and they won't have a clue what we're talking about. And those clues need to be dropped, men. When your expectations for that night are pretty high and you haven't said anything all day and you expect her to turn on automatically, it's not that she can't, but boy, there's a much better way to approach that. See, for a woman, it's part of the drama of life. There's a buildup. And see, we go off to work, and it's not infrequent that throughout the day, the idea of what is going to happen in bed tonight comes to our mind on several occasions throughout the day. That's not unusual. But if we let her know, see, if we told her, if we dropped some hints, if we helped the iron begin to already get warmed up before we even get home that night, well, guy came up to me after I told that story about the hand in the dark, and he says, Jack, you will have to admit that a hand in the dark is better than a Q-tip in the ear. Why can't I think of things like that? You know, I... See, have you communicated between the two of you as to what degree of dress or undress really is what is desirable? What is it that you like for her to wear? Have you, or not wear? Or have you talked about this? When was the last time you got up the courage to walk into a department store and into the lingerie department and up to the counter with this little cute 18-year-old chick standing behind the counter and without embarrassment or getting red in the face say, I'd like to have one of those right there, that light blue in a 34B and that other thing that matches it. That would be neat. The same color in a medium. And would you please gift wrap that? Now, some of you guys have never done that. I mean, my wife refers to that as a little thingy, and I take her home a little love token once in a while to, you know, that's just between the two of us. Some of you guys got to get up your courage, you know. You just need guts, that's all. Something that you know she would like and that you know you would like. Let me just mention two problems that come up from time to time that we're asked about in this area. One of the questions that from time to time we're asked about this whole matter is the issue of having a climax together at the same time, simultaneously. Is that something to strive for? Is that the epitome of all sexual responses? Well, if you read certain books, you'll find them kind of holding that out there as a carrot. Yeah, this boy, if you haven't experienced that yet, you've got something in store for you yet to come, and they kind of hold it out as a carrot, and you're striving for that the rest of your life. I'm not sure that's quite right. I'm not sure that's really what God intended. You know, if it happens, fine, but if it doesn't, not to think you have been shortchanged. See, the idea is to come to this together as a husband and a wife to enjoy a love feast together. That's the idea, to enjoy each other. To meet one another's needs in this area and to really have what I would describe as a love feast together. God has given us one another for that purpose. And enjoy that. Don't let something off there in the distance that maybe you've never experienced be something that makes you feel disappointed. Another thing that comes up is why is it, and we've been asked this, why is it that on Thursday night we go up to our bedroom and we go through this neat little routine and boy, when it happens, it's like skyrockets going off or bouncing off the ceiling. It's just like 4th of July. Next Thursday night, I'm just picking Thursday night, no special reason, but the next Thursday night, same bedroom, same little routine we go through, and no fireworks, no 4th of July celebration, no bouncing off the ceiling. It's just kind of deep-seated sense of satisfaction. Why the difference? I don't know. I know that's the way it is, and I suppose it's part of God's mystery. It's never quite the same. It's always just a little bit different. Exciting, wonderful, but different. I kind of liken that to two kinds of meals. If I had my choice of my favorite meal, although that's kind of hard to say, but I suppose it would be, though, about a 16-ounce New York strip steak, about an inch thick, medium rare, big baked potato with globs of butter on it, a nice salad with blue cheese dressing. Probably what we're going to have at the banquet tonight, I would imagine. Some nice rolls and butter, and then after that's over, a nice piece of homemade apple pie with a big glob of vanilla ice cream on top of it. That, you know, that I could go for that at least once a week, and if I could afford it in terms of my waistline and my pocketbook, but I can't. Well, I hope somebody puts that in for us downstairs, yeah. On the other hand, I like a McDonald's hamburger, you know, Big Mac. When you have an attack, you go have a Big Mac. And, you know, both meet a need at the time. Both are nourishing. Both satisfy. And so that's kind of how I liken the two Thursday nights, you know. One is a New York strip steak and one is a Big Mac. And they're different, but nevertheless, both meet the need at the time. So, you know, don't let that get in your way of enjoying one another's fellowship together on those wonderful times. I know what you're going to be thinking now next time you pull into a McDonald's. You deserve a break today, huh? Someone has described the perfect mate for any man as an angel in the home and a tiger in bed. I think it was Charlie Shedd that said something close to that, but I think they're right. I really believe that most wives really want to be that to their husbands. They want to be an angel in the home. They want to meet the needs of their home, their husband and their family in the area of the home. But at the same time, they want to be a tiger in bed. And guys, we have a responsibility as husbands to help our wives become both by meeting their needs in this particular area. But it's another aspect of marriage which we need to work at and we need to communicate on. Okay, now before Carol comes up and talks about this same subject from a woman's point of view, you can tell that my approach to it is a little bit slanted. It's a little bit masculine. But Carol's going to talk about the same subject from a woman's point of view, and you'll see some differences. But before we do that, let's stand up and have our morning back rub, huh? Okay?
Several times, the King James Version of the Scriptures uses a very interesting word for intercourse. It says, "And he knew her, and she conceived and had a child." So the word for intercourse here is "he knew her." And I love that because to me and to a great many women, sexual intercourse is really a communion. It's a knowledge. It's communion of body, soul, and spirit. It's way much more, as Jack said, than just a mere act. It is a part of life itself. God has so much more for us in this area than the world communicates. The world today, of course, is communicating that sex is just another physical thing that you do. God says that it is like a deep well. Proverbs 5 talks about this, that sex is like a deep well springing up, refreshing you. But it says casual sex is like you were throwing the waters of your life on the streets of your life. It's like muddy puddles. But married love is like those deep wells. And Proverbs 5 sums it up in 15 to 19 this way. Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. In other words, be faithful. Should your springs overflow in the streets, your streams of water in the public squares? Let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breath satisfy you always. May you be ever captivated by her love. That's God's desire. And it's very plain language here as he tells us what he would have for us in this area. But because of what we're hearing today, because of some of the backgrounds that you all have been raised with, we come to this area of beautiful love and oneness with some very confused ideas. And as a result, we have all kinds of wrong tapes that are going around in our heads. One summer a few years ago, I had four women come to me with four different problems that I thought were very difficult ones and very unusual ones at the time. Having been around a little bit longer, I realized that these are not unusual problems, and there may be people here that are having this kind of problems. But why I'm telling you these problems, because I want to show you how God has the answers. You know, the Bible is the best marriage manual in the whole wide world. And if we'd really practice what God says in scriptures, we would have the best marriages in the whole world. Now, of course, we're talking about letting God be so deep in our lives that we're able to take every area to him, including this one. You know, you can pray about sex. Did you know that? God isn't embarrassed. And you can pray about all aspects of your life. God has so much for you, and he has the answers. And I actually mean that even in the sex areas, this area, that God has some specific answers, because as Jack has said, the Song of Solomon is almost a sex manual as far as even techniques are concerned, if you get a hold of a good book. Now, of course, God doesn't go into all the details. And there are other things that can help you on that. And we're not going into all the details simply because we aren't medical doctors, and we feel that reading some of these books together could be the better part that you would have. Getting a tape of Dr. Wheat's is good if you don't read together. Listen to it. He's even got videos. And with drawings, that would be really good for you to listen to as a couple. But let me tell you the four different problems, and let me show you how Scripture has the answers. One woman said that although she had been married for a number of years, she had never, to her knowledge, experienced a climax. This is not an unusual problem. Another woman said that her husband so repulsed her that she could not stand to have him come near her. He was quite obese, but this was not her problem. It went much deeper than that. Another said that she was so shy that she was afraid to undress in the same room as her husband. And the fourth said that her husband had not come near her in 4 years sexually. Now, this probably was the most unusual problem, and yet we are finding in this age of drug use, of alcohol, alcoholism, that there are more cases of impotency and a whole lot of things going on here than we would like to assume. Now let me read to you 1 Corinthians 7 in the Phillips Version to see how God tells you what to do about these particular difficulties and many others that come up from time to time. This is what God says in Scripture. The husband should give his wife what is due to her as his wife, and the wife should be as fair to her husband. See, this is the answer to that husband that had been withholding himself for 4 years for his what? To his wife. He was not just sinning against his wife, he was actually sinning against God. Now, granted that some problems in this way are physiological problems, a matter of impotence, but if that man has that kind of problem, he really needs to see a doctor and find out why. For God's sake and for his wife's sake, he needs to do something about it, to give his wife what is due to her as his wife, you see. Interesting article last month or the month before in Reader's Digest called Warning, Smoking Endangers Your Sex Life. Some of you may have seen this. Listen to what it says. Only a decade ago, doctors blamed 9 out of 10 cases of impotence on emotional problems, and a great many are. And a great many are caused by unfaithfulness and a lot of other things too. But today we know that at least half the time the primary cause is physical. Researchers believe that by age 50, more than 25% of men rarely or never achieve a satisfactory erection. Because these men seldom talk about it, no one knows how many marriages are destroyed by this condition or how many desperate victims turn to alcohol or drugs. So it could be the chicken before the egg here. I mean, this may have turned them to drugs and alcohol instead of drugs and alcohol causing it, you see. So there's a lot of complicated factors here. This article goes on to say, 4 main risk factors for impotence caused by poor circulation are, 1, smoking, diabetes, elevated cholesterol, and high blood pressure. And of course, of these, there are several things that really can be done about it, including they have discovered if the person will quit smoking, that very often within a year, he is back to normal as far as his sexual capacity is concerned. So friends, this is something we need to do something about, and God will help us. But it says the husband should give his wife what is due to her as his wife, and the wife should be as fair to her husband. The wife has no longer full rights over her own person, but shares them with her husband. See, this is the answer to that wife who was so shy that she was afraid to undress in front of her husband. And perhaps the answer to that wife who was repulsed by her husband. You see, friends, God made us to become one. And in order to become one, we need a lot of these tapes that we'd have from our background sometimes erased, and we need God to renew our minds to have a healthy view of the reason God created us, the way he created us, so that we can take pleasure in this aspect, take pleasure in one another's bodies. And some of us have to pray that God would so renew our minds that we would have a whole new aspect about our own bodies and about this view of what God has given us sexual pleasure for. We'll talk about that in a minute, a little bit more. But she shares them with her husband in the same way the husband shares his personal rights with his wife, that idea of oneness again. And then it says these words, do not cheat each other, therefore, of normal sexual intercourse. Unless, of course, you both decide to abstain temporarily to make special opportunity for fasting and prayer. But afterward, you should resume relations as before, or you will expose yourselves to the obvious temptation of the devil. I'm not reading a sex manual, I'm reading the Bible. Now let me talk to you wives just a minute here. If we couple this with Matthew 18, verse 7, which says, for it is necessary that temptations come, But woe to the man or woman, I might say, by whom the temptations come. We have some very valuable applied principles from these passages of Scripture. What this is saying, my friends, is that your husband is going to face temptation out there. He, as Jack said, he can't go by a newsstand that he doesn't see some things that he doesn't want to see. He can't turn on television, he can't read a book, he can't. But there is temptation. Now, he's got to face that. That is his personal responsibility. And I'm not going to make any excuses for him if he falls. But the Bible is also saying to you, woe be to you, my friend, if you are causing some of that temptation by not supplying what your husband needs in this area of the sexual part of his whole being. Woe be to you if you are causing it. Now, to me, this has some significant things to say to wives. It's saying we are wrong to withhold ourselves sexually to punish our husbands for something that they have done or have not done that we would like them to not do or do. Now, granted that because love and sex is so intertwined in our beings. See, most women cannot compartmentalize this part of their lives. It's just impossible for us to do that. It's just intertwined in our whole being. And so when you husbands do not, well, let me put it this way. Let's say that we have created in our marriage a neat little area here of sex. And then our husbands change jobs or things don't go right for them. Everything is falling apart in their world. And so they come home and they do take it out on us. And the kids do scatter and the dog stays out on the back porch and so on. And everything is ugly at your house. And the harsh forces begin. And that night he wants to have some love in bed. And you say, oh, I've got this splitting headache. And you probably really do have a splitting headache. But what does that do to him? Well, it hits at the very heart of his manliness, of who he is as a man. It hits him where it hurts the most. And so what happens? Well, things get worse. And that night you don't even make an excuse. You say, thanks, but no thanks, buddy. And things get worse. And often we see a case like this in the divorce courts, and the sex life is blamed when it hasn't been the sex life at all. It's been our attitude toward it. Now, what can we do? Well, it ain't easy. Because let's say we've developed this area of our life that's beautiful and lovely, and then everything happens, and your husband does have gets fired on the job, and he takes it out on you. But that night when he wants to make love to you, you say to the Lord, Lord, in myself I can't. It is just so difficult to respond when I'm not feeling loved. But Lord, you have said, and I want to really give to my marriage, and I do love my husband. And so, Lord, just help me to respond 100%. Now, you can't, but God can. You know, it's part of Philippians 4, isn't it? I can do almost all things through Christ who gives me strength. Is that what it says? No, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. And as Christ helps me, we can respond and meet our husband's needs in this area. And what happens? Well, you've softened things out here a little bit. You've helped them be the man that you wanted them to be, and things smooth out. Interestingly enough, I call sex the oil in the machinery because of this. Jack calls it the frosting on the cake. Now you think about that a little while and you'll see that that's very significant. It's an act, the frosting on the cake. For me, it's all, it permeates all of life. And it's the oil in the machinery. One of the differences between men and women in the area of sex is that sex to a man makes everything okay. Sex to a woman means everything's okay. And that, too, as you think about it, is quite a significant difference. But let's get back to the words of Scripture. It says, do not cheat each other of normal sexual intercourse. Okay, our next question then is, what's normal? Well, friends, I'm not sure what normal is, but average is 2.5 times a week. Now, I don't know how one does 1/2 of a time, but that's what they say. But friends, forget them. Forget what they say. In fact, lots of times, Jack and I encourage you not to read a lot of the sex manuals, because a lot of, especially the secular ones, of course, give you some strange ideas. But besides that, you should read a sex manual like Dr. Wheat's or something, maybe once every few years, just to refresh yourself, and you can keep growing in this area too. But the fact is, this is to be a love feast. It's whatever pleasures the two of you together. The two of you, not just one, the two of you. So whatever is normal or average for you, that's what you're trying to figure out here, not what's average and normal for everybody else. And this is another area that you pray about and ask God and talk about. But see, men, remember that a woman, a great deal of the sex act to a woman really is bound up in the intimacy, the closeness, the being held. The love, the foreplay, all of that is to many women much more important than actually having an orgasm. Believe me. And so don't put pressure on your wife to come. Don't say, how was it? You know, because that just puts pressure on her. And whereas she really can enjoy the process whether or not she ever has an orgasm. Now, of course, that's something you want to work at, and we'll talk about that in a second. But it is the love feast, and if women can just look on it and, as that. And see, sometimes that's all women want, is just to be held. And we need that. And so sometimes when... it's probably just good that you remember. We just need a lot of being held sometimes, apart from sex. In fact, Dr. Wheat goes as far as to say that many women seek affairs not out of the desire for sex, but out of the desire for intimacy and closeness and being held. And that's probably true. Charlie Shedd says in his little book, Letters to Karen, on sex, but from the marriages I have seen in consultation, it is apparent that how often usually matters most to the man, and the how to is most important to the woman. Yet no matter the frequency, the main thing is to come to it joyfully. There will be no exception to this rule. You are a prudent wife when you look on sex in part as your opportunity to be a blessing to your husband. The tender woman trains herself to receive a great measure of contentment just from contenting her man. Now, what I am not saying is that you should never say no. Obviously, in a good relationship, there are going to be sometimes when you really do have a headache and it has nothing to do with what's going on. And there are times when you're going to say, hey, I love it, but can I take a rain check on it? There's nothing wrong with that. But to come to it joyfully. To look on this opportunity to be a blessing to your husband, a giving thing. Now, friends, this is both ways, to give in this area. In fact, I had a woman, a very godly wife, tell me years ago that she felt that almost 100% of problems in the sexual area were actually a problem of selfishness. And at the time, I didn't believe her. I thought, oh, come on, that's a little bit exaggerated. But the more I've heard, the more I've realized that there's a great deal of truth to that. We want things our way, in the way we want them, whether husband or wife. Example. I talked with one wife who said to me, "Carol, I know that I need to pray until I really get a healthy view about my own body. But," she said, "to tell you the truth, I just don't feel good about my own body. I don't like it." And she said, "And yet my husband insists on making love in broad daylight." She said, "I simply cannot get turned on." Now, friends, what was that on her husband's part? See, it was selfishness. Now, granted, she had to pray so that until she could do that, if he preferred it, but until she could, he needed to be patient. He needed to be unselfish. She needed the soft lights or no lights. She needed the atmosphere that he wasn't willing to give her. Talked with another wife who said, "You know, when we make love, my husband insists on being so verbal. He just talks all the time." And she says, "I just can't respond." And I said, "Well, have you ever thought about the idea of one time asking him to be quiet so you can enjoy the feelings and then the next time just let him talk up a storm?" Well, no, she never thought of that. Well, now what was that? That was both giving for the other. Think about it. When a husband expects a wife to turn on in 15 seconds, what is that? That's selfishness. And yet there are times when a wife doesn't feel like it, but she says, "Honey, yeah, I love you. Let's go to it." That's, what is that? That's unselfishness. Oh, before God, may we ask God to do a deep work in our hearts, that we will have that agape love in this area, as well as other areas, that we would be willing to give. Now, friends, I do have to put a little warning in here. I am not talking about dysfunctional situations. If you are in a dysfunctional situation, and by that I mean a wife-beating, sadistic kind of things, I am not talking to you. You need to get help in that situation. And if you counsel with people in dysfunctional situations, be careful. But I'm talking to the 99% of you who are pretty normal in this. Charlie Shedd goes on to say from a little article called "The Saint and the Sweet Little Sinner." He says, "The perfect mate for any man has been described as an angel in the home," and he says, "a devil in bed." Jack doesn't like that, so he changed it to tiger. He's the one Jack gets this from, though. And Charlie goes on to say, "But the wives I have known who could qualify for such an accolade are in the minority. I see their opposite often in consultation. Some of them proudly announce, 'I never refuse him.' They remind me of hopeful heroes waiting in line for the Purple Heart." Actually, that might be the worst thing you could say about your marriage. Now get this. Any man gets weary if he must always make the first move. So, Charlie says, let's start with this. And I'll give you a few pointers on becoming the saintly little demon who can keep her man the kind of man she wants him to be. And his first point is, be sexually aggressive some of the time. Never forget that a husband wants to be wanted. Your husband longs to believe that he's wonderful enough for you to yearn sometimes for his sexual companionship. It matters everything to a man if he has a home where he knows he is of inestimable value as a man. Your husband can stand much more in the rough and tumble of a cutthroat world if you have convinced him that there is a waiting emotional center where he is vitally important. Now, of course, I'm sure there are a few husbands out there who get threatened if their wives are the aggressor in this. If you are one of them, she needs to know that. If you are not, she needs to know that too. His second point is, don't be afraid of experiment and variety. Sex ought to be fun. Have you gotten to the place where you use your sanctified imagination in this? I said sanctified. But this is an area where you can have a lot of fun. You know, you can be in the same bedroom, in the same bed, every day of your life, Or you can decide one night that you are going to transport yourself mentally to the ski slopes of Colorado. And so you're shushing down the mountain, and all of a sudden this terrible blizzard comes up. And you just can't go any further. And oh, there's this little cabin here. And so you go into the cabin, and there is a fire all lit, and a little snack, and a bearskin rug, and what are you going to do? Now, I am not talking about fantasizing with somebody else. We are hearing a lot of talk that whatever turns you on is okay. It is not okay. That is sin. Your desire is to be to your husband. Your desire is to be to your wife. And that means mental desire as well as physical desire. So I'm not talking about fantasizing, but just, man, let your imagination go and pretend you're back on your honeymoon or whatever. There are lots of things you can pretend to keep fun in your relationship. And then it says, keep your body alluring. This goes both ways. You know, because a woman is not just stimulated through her eye gate, but because she is stimulated through her ears, she likes the soft music, the nice little words, whatever, through her smell, through her nose, she doesn't like body odor and all kinds of unpleasant smells. And gentlemen, there's really plenty of soap in this world. So she's also stimulated by touch. So please shave. If you're clean shaven, you know, if you have a beard, don't worry about it. But she's stimulated by all of her senses. And a lot of men don't realize what just the personal habits have to do with her ability to respond. Another area of just unselfishness, giving. But what about the wife who doesn't like sex? What about the wife who has never achieved a climax? Let me just say one word. This is a huge subject, of course, and I can't go into it in detail, but books have been written on it. As I said, this is not an unusual occurrence. However, let me say again, there are wives who have never achieved a climax who still have a wonderful sex life, and they'll tell you that. Why? Well, because they just love the love feast. And it isn't a big deal for them that they've never experienced an orgasm. So don't let that be a hindrance if you're one of those kinds of wives. But if you don't like sex, if you're worried about this, it needs to be looked at. If you realize that there's so much more in this area that you're experiencing and you long to experience it but you don't know how, that's the kind of person that I'm talking to right now. You see, sex to a woman especially is a learned response. Gentlemen, don't forget that. It is a learned response. It doesn't just come naturally with most women. One thing triggers another thing, triggers another thing, triggers another thing. But so often these days, we have never developed the healthy responses, and for a lot of reasons. You see, this is birth. And from birth to puberty, a woman just doesn't have sexual responses. She just blah. And then she reaches puberty. She begins to menstruate. And I'm going to run out of room here. And her desires begin a little bit. Those feelings begin to stir somewhat. She reaches her teenage years, and they go up a little bit more. And then she falls in love. Because love and sex are so intertwined in the very heart of most women, it starts going straight up. And hopefully here is where she gets married. But how often do we see this picture these days? Very seldom do we see this kind of normal response. What happens is that from birth to puberty, we get tapes put in our minds that a mother that says, "Oh, I just do it because I have to." All kinds of negative input we get. Or we're hearing so much more these days about the fact that incest, that rape, and all of these things occur even in these years. That the tapes, of course, the natural responses are broken. Or she may get to here, to puberty, before anything negative happens, and she enters her high school years, and she thinks the thing to do to be popular is to make love in the backseat of a car. She doesn't really enjoy it. Most women don't. But she does it. And she feels really guilty. And the response, again, is broken. Or she reaches here, and she thinks that she should live with a guy before they get married. Again, there's guilt feelings. All kinds of things enter here, and her responses to see from here to here. When you fall in love, you should be working on intimacy, not intercourse, but intimacy, until those feelings build up naturally. Some women who have their courtship only in letters have a difficult time with this, for instance, the other way, because they've jumped from a goodnight kiss to bed, to their honeymoon. And they have a difficult time really responding. So what is the answer? This would look like a very bleak picture, wouldn't it? Because it's probably true anymore of 85%. I just made up that statistic, but probably. Of women. Well, what do we need to do? Well, Masters and Johnsons have made studies in this, and you can read Dr. Wheat's book. But what we need to do, my friends, is relearn our sexual responses. We may need to go to our sweethearts and say, you know, there's got to be more to this than I'm experiencing, and I just need to relearn some of my responses. I need maybe 3 or 4 days of just a lot of hugging and kissing without thinking that we're going to have sex. See, that's what Masters and Johnsons would tell you to do. They'd say, go away for 2 weeks to a motel, get some sex counseling, but for 3 or 4 days you would be doing non-sexual touching to one another. Just to find out what feels good. A lot of hugging and kissing, rebuilding those responses. Then after 4 or 5 days or whatever, you would begin sexual touching, but without having intercourse. Until you're rebuilding those responses, what feels good. And then finally, you would go to the intercourse, probably letting the wife call the timing on it. And to tell her when she's responding and what really helps her to respond. And you're rebuilding those responses. God has so much for you. God is so good. He is such a fantastic God. Begin. One story and I'm finished. About 10 years ago, I sat across a table from a friend of mine. And my friend told me of her problems, and she had great problems. For probably 3 hours, she told me her problems, and probably for the 15th time, she told me her problems. And so because she was a friend of mine, I stopped her as she took a deep breath, and I said, "Friend, if you were to draw a circle which represents your life, what would be in the exact center?" And she thought, and then she said, "My problems." And she spoke the truth. A week later, I sat across a hospital bed from my younger sister, who had just been diagnosed as having acute lymphatic leukemia. She was death gray and perspiring, and a swath of bandages encased her throat from a biopsy. When a young student nurse came in to interview my sister Joy for what she called her stress experience, what she was doing was interviewing terminally ill patients to see whether, in talking about their fears, she might be able to help them in some way. I saw my sister with literally a light from inside say to this young student nurse, "Oh, Jan, I'm not afraid of death. Oh, I'm a bit fearful of the pain and the process of dying. But I'm not afraid of death. It's just going to be a change of residence for me. And for 45 minutes, she explained the good news of Jesus Christ to Jan. I came away from those two situations, I thought, what made the difference? Both had problems. But one was walking in despair, and the other was walking in joy. And then I thought, oh yes, it's because one's heart was occupied with her problems, and the other's heart was occupied with the living God. Made all the difference in the world. Friends, having your heart occupied with the living God is not going to happen overnight. It's a process as you go deep with Him. But it's the only answer, not only to living a life of joy, but to living a life of love with Him and with your sweetheart.
Well, this is it as far as our part in the conference, and we would be remiss if we did not tell you how much we have enjoyed being here with you this week and fellowshipping with many of you individually and as couples. It's just been a real blessing for Carol and myself to have participated in this, and we trust that it has been as rich a blessing for you as it has been for us. As we mentioned earlier, every time we do the seminar, it's a constant reminder to us of the things that we need to take into consideration in this wonderful adventure that we call marriage. And so in closing this morning, what we'd like to have you do, for those of you who are here as couples, I'd like to have you just pause right where you are right now and think about how you would finish this sentence in two or three sentences or less. I thank God for you because, of course, speaking of your mate, I thank God for you because. How would you finish that? And now we're going to give you a chance to express that. We'd like to have you stand and turn to one another, hold hands, and just put in words, quietly but out loud, what you've just thought about. Say that to each other, and then after you've done that, if you want to just pray together quietly out loud, why, take the time to do that, and then we're going to close in prayer, okay? Our Heavenly Father, we want to pause now and lift our hearts to you individually and as couples and give you thanks for one another and for the relationship that you are establishing between us. And Lord, we both, as husband and wife, realize that this is an ongoing thing, that we have not yet achieved that which you have on your heart for us, but we certainly are committed to working at it and continuing for the rest of our lives to devote ourselves to one another and to you and to become what you want us to become as individuals and as a couple. Father, I want to pray for each husband here that you will bless him as the provider of nourishment and raiment, and that you will sustain him in all of the exactions and pressures of his battle for bread. May his strength be her protection, his character be her boast and her pride, and may he so live that she will find in him the haven for which the heart of a woman truly longs.
And Father, bless this loving wife. Give her a tenderness that will make her great, a deep sense of understanding and a great faith in you. Give her that inner beauty of soul that never fades, that eternal youth that is found in holding fast the things that never age.
And Father, make such assignments to them on the scroll of your will as will bless them and develop their characters as they walk together. Give them just enough tears to keep them tender, enough hurts to keep them human, enough of failure to keep their hands clenched tightly in yours, and just enough of success to make them sure that they do walk with God.
May they never take each other's love for granted, but always experience that breathless wonder that exclaims, "Out of all this world, you have chosen me."
And then, Lord, when life is done and the sun is setting, may they be found then, as now, still hand in hand, still thanking God for each other. May they serve you happily, faithfully, together, until at last one shall lay the other into the arms of God. These things we ask through Jesus Christ, the great lover of our souls. Amen.
Amen.